sort of get this thing started, and we'll wing it.
All right.
So introduce yourself to the world.
Hi, my name is Sean Kinley. I am a Loose Moose member for, well, I'd say since 1983, 84-ish.
How did you get involved with Loose Moose?
Let's see. Oh, it would have to have been 1983 because back in high school, I remember seeing Loose Moose going down during the heyday back then and wanting to be involved. And at the time, I was doing tons of mime work, a lot of physical theater. And Loose Moose put out an audition notice for The Boy Who Cried Wolf. And I thought it'd be a nice way to get involved, so that's how I did it. And actually, before that, I had given them some written material for a late night show they were doing, the Big Time Late Show. And I was down there kind of as a writer of sorts for their late night show, a sketch comedy show that lasted many years. And then the kids show came along and I auditioned for that. So that's how it got in. Actually, not even improvising. It was all kind of structured work.
Right. Yeah. Scripted shows.
Yep.
Right. What had you been doing performance-wise before coming to Loose Moose?
Well, mostly mime and mask work, and I'd been performing a lot in Germany for variety shows. So I had my own little scenes, and I would do shows there, and it was kind of taken off, and that's where I thought my career was heading. But then I found Loose Moose and started doing a little bit more verbal work.
Speaking of Germany, every time I talk to somebody about Sean, Sean is somewhere around the globe doing stuff. Tell me a little bit about that. What are you doing around the world?
Well, actually, I just got back from 3 months of travels about a week ago, and that's why I'm kind of stuffy, because I was teaching in Belgium, and I got some flu bug from some Belgian kids.
Oh, no.
Loose Moose has connections to, 60, 70, 80 countries around the world because of improvisation theater work. And it started off with these people coming to Loose Moose for the summer school, which happens every year.
Right.
And I've been teaching now for 20 years at that school, and the connections I've made with them, they've always invited me back to their country to do some teaching.
Right.
And it spreads very, very quickly from doing a workshop to spreading into a couple shows and 5 or 6 more workshops.
Yeah.
So a typical gig for me right now is going over to Europe and working mostly in Norway, Finland, and Sweden, and then dropping down to Germany and France and Belgium and London. That was the last trip.
Right.
So next time, about 5 more weeks, heading back to Europe for a bit, and then to Singapore, and that's going to be another, 4 months.
Right.
So
let's say in the last year, most of your trips then have been to Europe.
It's been evenly spread right now to Southeast Asia and Europe.
Right.
So,
okay.
And then South America is going to be my first trip in November with a Chilean group and a Colombian group. So it'll be fun.
So seeing as how you've had an opportunity to visit different parts of the world and see how they react to the art of improvisation, like in Canada, I sort of get a sense that we really like improvisation. Canadians seem to embrace it. We really enjoy it for some reason. I'm sure it's got something to do with our psyche and how we, you know, don't take ourselves very seriously. How is it different in other parts of the world?
Well, it depends on a number of things. It depends on their exposure, generally through television, on their culture. Like if you go to Japan, and you're trying to teach improvisation, there's a quality to improvisation or an element of improvisation where you have to accept your partner's offers.
Right.
It's called blocking. If you block an idea, ideas don't move forward. Well,
right.
In most cultures around the world, you really have to work on that because our natural tendency is to block ideas. In Japan, you don't have to touch that at all because they don't block. It would be very disgraceful to block ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So culturally, it's interesting to drop into a country and to learn exactly what it is that you have to teach because
right.
it's a different style.
Right.
And every country around the world appreciates improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
Some in a professional way, like in Finland, they have mostly their professional artists who were first introduced to improvisation kind of taking over, and there was an improvised movie that came out 2 years ago. They got like €1 million from the government, and they have an improvised television show that's kind of a soap opera type thing. Whereas if you go to, say, Holland, it's mostly amateurs, and then they have a TV show that all the improvisers dislike, but the public likes, called Dilemmas, which is more stand-up comedy.
Right.
In countries where that happens, and it happens in quite a few countries, where stand-up comedy is seen as improvisation, it's very difficult for the amateur groups to take off and become professional. Germany, you go to Germany, and cities like Berlin have 13 improvisation groups in each city performing on a regular basis. So we're by no means the country that does it the most.
Right.
In some ways, because we're so spread out, we're disconnected, and mm-hmm. our styles are very spread out. But, for example, in Europe, they look forward to seeing three improvisation groups. They look forward to seeing the Crumbs from Winnipeg, mm-hmm. Rapid Fire, Scratch, and Loose Moose Theatre.
Right.
And we generally have different styles, but a quality of fearlessness and playfulness, and mostly the playfulness that most countries don't get, because they will often try to do it by the rules as opposed to play around and mess around with the rules. And I think that has come a lot from our influence from Keith
mm-hmm.
Johnstone.
Mm-hmm.
So different cultures, different ways of looking at it. There are some countries that are having improvisation wars where styles are battling against each other. And it's just a different story everywhere, but everybody seems to love it.
Let's go back a little bit. When did Sean first get interested in performing at all?
I was probably, 11 years old, I think, probably doing a little bit of street performing downtown Calgary.
At 11?
Yeah, and I didn't have any desire to make money at it. I was doing magic at the time. Oh, I remember that, yeah. Magic with some friends, and it was a way of getting some practice. And then realizing that this was a quick way to express ideas, and I always had interesting ideas of things that I wanted to develop, so it took off into doing mime and stretching out the ideas into scene work. And because we're an isolated area, Calgary, there's nobody teaching mime.
Right.
There was a group at the time, Arete Mime, but most of my work came from reading books and watching TV shows and groups like Mum and Schatz from Switzerland and Red Skelton, and the inspirations kind of came from things I saw on TV and read in books.
Right.
So my style became fairly unique in what was good as well as what was bad, because I didn't have people saying, that's bad, don't do it.
Right.
I just kept doing it until an audience told me that it was bad by not showing up or by not applauding for things that I thought were good.
Right.
So I had audiences teach me, and that kind of took me into, from there into mass work, into teaching, which taught me how to perform better and how to see ideas differently. And I primarily, actually, I think I see myself more as a teacher than a performer, because I love ideas. And being on stage is very secondary for me, mm-hmm. although I wouldn't give it up.
Right.
Yeah.
Who taught you performing?
Well, books.
Okay.
And
so no specific person or school or course?
No.
Okay.
At the beginning, it was, I have nobody to teach me, so I'm just going to see what I like and try to develop things along those styles. Yeah.
Cool. You are frenetic on stage. You have this energy and this playfulness. It's almost like you revert into your childhood, the things that you agree to do on stage. And I notice it's very motivating to the rest of the players that get to perform with you as well. How do you do that? You just got this element of your youth still embedded in you, or is it like that switch that turns on when you get on stage?
I suppose if I were to get all psychoanalytical about it, I would say partly it has to do with not having a father growing up. He left when I was about 4.
Right.
And so I didn't have the person saying, stay in control,
right,
start behaving like an adult.
Yeah.
My mother was off working, so it wasn't like she could say, now you have to behave. And I really never lost that. And I still couldn't understand why people worked 9 to 5 in jobs they didn't like, so they could have the time left over at the end of the week, working 5 days so that you have 2 days off, and working 30, 40 years of your life so you could have your retirement off. Made no sense. And for me, life was about play and joy and consideration for the people around you. And that kind of stayed embedded in my life because I lived by what I felt was giving me passion. And if it didn't pay any bills, then I heated my home less, and I ate less food, and I lived within the means, the whole struggling artist thing. And for me, living in Montreal, this is what happened after high school, mm-hmm. and living in a little basement flat, not having any food in the cupboards, felt wonderful coming home to the little bit of macaroni that I had left over in the refrigerator, because I was living as opposed to surviving mm-hmm. day to day. Mm-hmm. And that's just never left. And in improvisation, I think there's a lesson about returning back to childhood. If you really want to improvise in a fluid way, then there has to be a quality of child in a person.
Right. Well, speaking of lessons, and I know this is a hard question to answer, but just pick one thing that you would consider to be one of the most important lessons that someone learning improvisation needs to get figured out quick.
You are not on stage alone, and I think that's what most people consider, especially under panic situations. They start to lose focus of the world around them, and they panic.
We have an audience who doesn't even realize what we're doing over here. Okay, that's awesome. So let's get to these questions for the benefit of the people listening to this interview. This is totally ad-libbed right from the beginning because okay. It was unprepared. I'm going to try and see if I can remember all of the questions from that James Lipton asks on his show. So we'll start with the first one. Sean, what is your favorite word?
Monkey, I suppose.
What is your least favorite word?
Least favorite word? Arrogance.
What inspires you creatively, emotionally?
Animals and children.
Okay. What sound or noise do you love?
The sound of cats purring or dogs breathing.
What sound or noise do you hate?
The sound of people chewing popcorn in your ear as you're watching a show.
All right. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Zoologist or psychologist.
What profession other than your own would you definitely not want to attempt?
Interrogator I wouldn't mind. Wouldn't like to have... I can see good things from just about everything. I wouldn't want to be a... No, I could do anything.
Okay.
I just wouldn't want to do everything.
That's fine. Favorite curse word?
Favorite curse word? Fucker.
All right. And I think this is the last question. If God exists, what would you like to hear him say to you when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Did you have a good time?
Cool. Awesome. Anyway,
yes.
Just going to wrap this up so that we can
cool.
put a wrapper on it. Thanks, Sean, for your time.
Yeah.
And look forward to seeing you on stage again.
Thanks for the interview, and hope to see you on stage, too.
Awesome.